is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now, on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey. Doc, how are you today?
I am doing well all the way here from Brooklyn, New York. Weather, as always, beautiful. Had a great run today, you know, practicing what I preach. And yes, always happy to be here with you and our amazing audience.
Thanks, Dr. Ramsey. Today is June 14th. So for some context with our listeners, when they do listen to this podcast, when it's released later on, they'll know what time of year it is. Beautiful weather indeed. So welcome to the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast. This is the third of four episodes where we've invited special guests and students from summer courses I teach at Canisius College, soon to be Canisius University on August 1st officially. So exciting. Students in these courses are graduate teacher candidates on the verge or cusp of student teaching, newly minted teachers, or even some experienced health and physical education practitioners. We have also special guests and students review articles ahead of time so we can discuss. So that said, our panel includes some exciting individuals, and more on that in a quick second. We could not be more excited for them. The articles that we are reviewing in today's episode are entitled Physical Educators' Attitudes Towards the Teaching Profession and Perceptions of School Climate by our very own Dr. Kate Cardina and colleague. Why should we participate in your state association at every phase of your HPE career by Ben Schwarmberger and colleagues? And last but not least, a professional legacy is a journey. What path will you travel? Written by yours truly. So, like I mentioned, in addition to our graduate students and Dr. Ramsey, I'm excited to introduce our guest for today. Our first guest is the Honorable Executive Director of New York State AFERD, the one and only Ms. Colleen Corsi. Colleen holds a Bachelor of Science degree from the State University of New York at Brockport, a Master's of Science in Education from Central Missouri State University, and her Certificate of Advanced Study in Educational Administration from the New York State Education Department. She's been a teacher, a coach, and served as the Associate in Physical Education and Athletics for the New York State Education Department. For the past 25 years, she has been the New York State AFERD Executive Director, providing leadership and vision to New York State's governing body to ensure financial growth and stability. She's a past president of the Eastern District Society of Association Management, National Society of Association Management, and New York State Council of Education Associations. Say that three times. Colleen presented the Jerry DiGostino Memorial Lecture at the College at Brockport, presented the 2010 Eastern District Memorial Lecture, and was honored to present What Will Your Legacy Be at the first Puerto Rico AFERD Conference. Most recently, she was the lecturer for Dr. Ron Feingold's lecture series at the 2017 New York State AFERD Annual Conference. She's been the recipient of numerous awards and recognitions. And of course, she is one of our returning champions, Dr. Ramsey, on the podcast. Colleen, welcome. Would you like to say a quick welcome to our guests and listeners?
Sure. Thank you for that, Clancy. I'm really excited to be here. You know, my job has me in this office all day long, 7 days a week, and I don't have an opportunity to engage with students like the rest of the panel does. So it's really exciting for me to have this opportunity. And thank you, Clancy and Victor, for the invitation. Excited. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Ms. Corsi. Not to be outdone, our second guest is Dr. Kate Cardina, who currently serves as the chair and professor of the Health, Nutrition, and Dietetics Program at Buffalo State University. She is a New York State certified health and physical education teacher. Her areas of research and academic interest include professional preparation in school and community health education and program evaluation. Her scholarship focuses on the role of teacher certification and professional development to enhance teacher quality. Other contributions to the field of health education include workshops for teachers, staff, and administrators designed to enhance their skills related to facilitating health and sexuality education among youth, individuals, and students with exceptional needs. A quick welcome, Dr. Cardina, to our listeners.
All right. Got a little slow on the switch there. thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here and to interact with the students from Canisius. And it's always great to work with Dr. Ramsey, Dr. Seymour, and Executive Director Corsi.
Awesome.
That is awesome. Okay, my friends. So we all had a chance to read the articles. I'm sure you underlined some key questions, and we're ready to have a conversation. So we have some questions for discussion, and we're going to start with Dr. Candinia. Given your line of research and work and a body of work that you have done, what are the attitudes of health and physical educators in the workplace?
All right. Well, Dr. Seymour and I actually studied this together. So please jump in, because this was a collaborative effort. We actually looked at a nationally representative sample of physical education teachers in public schools to see what their attitudes were. And overall, they were positive compared to other secondary teachers. They really liked their job. They were less likely to want to transfer to another school or leave the profession. But they also worked really hard. Almost all of them were coaching. They also had leadership positions more so than other secondary teachers. And so you would think that this would, this has the potential to lead to burnout, but it really seemed to energize them. And they really liked their jobs. They saw difficulties and problems as challenges. They didn't tend to sweat the small stuff like taking attendance and paperwork and things like that. So they seem to have a really positive attitude, and that positive attitude is so important because it's research has shown it increases student learning. And so we really are seeing the physical educators as leaders in the school. Do you want to add anything with that, Dr. Seymour?
Well said, Dr. Cardina. I would venture to also add that physical educators in our research seem to not be influenced by accountability metrics or measures in their attitudes. When asked questions regarding standards or assessments or even teacher evaluation related components, their answers were not as divisive as they were from other disciplinary subject professionals. And I think that could be considered a good thing, like Dr. Cardina is mentioning, but also when looking at the broader landscape of the profession itself, it indicates that physical education doesn't have the same standing as other disciplines because they're not pressured by some of those other accountability metrics.
Thank you. I also want to add that as you were talking that the physical educators said that the administrators and their principals were really, they found that they received a lot of support from them, and much so than from this other teachers. The other teachers didn't feel like they were getting a lot of support, but interestingly, they didn't feel support from their colleagues. So you're going to have other people in the school, the language arts teacher or the music teacher or the mathematics teacher, and generally they didn't feel like they got support from that person. And I'm sort of thinking that maybe that's what contributes to the marginalization, is they don't really have the support from their colleagues as much as they do as their administrators.
Agreed, Dr. Carnita, well said. And I think Mackenzie, one of our graduate students, has a question along those lines. Go ahead, Mackenzie.
Hi, everybody. So in the article, it's stated that PE teachers were less likely to strongly agree when asked about support from colleagues, as we were just touching on. And a reason that was given in the article was that PE is kind of, it kind of has this diminished academic status. So I guess my question was, well, I guess I have two. What other reasons do you think could lead to this feeling from PE teachers? And then also us as future educators, how can we kind of go about changing this?
That's a great question and great observation. I think maybe coming to an agreement of a shared mission. That was something else that we found in our research, is that they didn't have the same shared values and mission. And so if you can find a common ground within your school district or within the building or within, you know, values that the two of you or you and your colleagues share, I think that's going to help you to get that collegial relationship going. Dr. Seymour, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. But this is certainly your show today, Dr. Cardina and Ms. Corsi's show, but I will add to it. I can speak, my students know I can speak till I'm blue in the face about this. Mac is spot on. It does point to a diminished standing. My first reaction to Mac's question is obvious. It does point to that, but there's a couple other things. Systemically, where are physical educators in the building? They're often in the back, in the gym, in the closet with the equipment. Sometimes they are by themselves. The profession sometimes is secluded. So that speaks to the lack of support, just inherently systemically built in to the profession. What else? What else do we see? We see other professionals from other disciplines who do not know what it is that we do. So it's hard to feel supported by others who do not know what we do, perhaps contribute to the marginalization, whether intentional or not. So I think that speaks to that, Mac, as well.
Yeah. I just want to add a piece, because I noticed in the article as well, when you were talking about the characteristics in the survey that you administered to teachers, when they talk about in the school staff members are recognized for a job well done, it speaks to the point of not sitting in that silo. Also, in my humble opinion, you know, being part of the process, to be part of the rest of the school community. So it was quite interesting to see that was one of the things that was noted in that article. So I appreciate that question, Mackenzie. Go ahead, Ms. Colleen.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, and I agree with what Dr. Ramsey said, that it really is important to get out of that cage, as we call it, where we keep all of our equipment, and to be really involved in the whole school community. I think that definitely would raise the level of how we're viewed by our colleagues. That would be number two. Number one for me would be that you have to have an amazing program. You know, I hate to say this, but oftentimes young teachers get into a school district, and some of your colleagues, your teacher colleagues, have been there for a while, and you really need to be out in front with everything that you're learning at your program in Canisius. You need to be a dynamic, excellent teacher who continuously learns, and then you're going to gain respect from your colleagues and your administrators. You can never be mediocre, because your work is too important. Any teacher, education is too important to the future of our society. So you have to accept right now, and you have to internalize that you have to be excellent in your work. And then you're going to gain respect from your colleagues and your administrators and your students and your parents.
Great advice, Ms. Corsi. It's not about what you're doing when being watched, it's when you're not being watched. And I think that speaks to that as well. So some great questions popping up from our graduate students. And I think Mac started it. And I think we've got Dan, who's got a question as well. Go ahead, Dan, introduce yourself.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm Dan Hodson. As Dr. Seymour stated earlier, my wife and I have a 7th-month-old at home, keeps us pretty busy. And might as well drop the bomb that we're going to double down, and we're having another one in January.
Congratulations, man.
That's great news.
Yeah. Say a prayer for me. But so my question, I mean, pretty simply stated, you know, we always hear about burnout, and, you know, it's a real thing. My question to basically all of you is, you know, what are some tips or tricks that you've learned along your, you know, career journey that, you know, has both been positive or negative, I guess. I'll take whatever you got for me. And just, you know, the 30 years in education, how do we continue to better ourselves and continue to grow without, you know, hitting the wall, so to speak?
So I kind of feel like I should at least start answering that question. And, you know, one of the primary things that you all should do is to, if you're not already, become a member of your professional organization. I mean, I have watched for 25 years plus people going to our, and I'll speak specifically to the New York State AFERT conference and to our zone conferences that we have throughout 11 regions in the state. I have watched people walk into that conference, and by the time the conference is over, they are so excited about getting back to the classroom to use what they've learned. And it's just, people just, you know, the light bulbs just come on constantly throughout that whole conference, and they're learning, they're networking, they're sharing, they're presenting, they're presiding. And that's just one of the things that we offer as member benefits. And, you know, there's a whole list of them. I don't feel the need right now to mention them, but the one thing that I would say, Dan, is, I'm not being self-serving. I'm thinking of all of you and thinking about what I've learned through my 36 years in education, that if you become a member of your professional organization and you give back, you lift others up, you will feel lifted up, and it will make a huge difference in your career. And that goes back to this whole professional legacy, and it's where you can start. So that's my advice.
Great advice. Anything else to add from Dr. Ramsey or Dr. Cardina regarding that?
I'm going to allow Dr. Cardina to share her piece, and then I'll share a little bit.
Sure.
Go ahead, Dr. C.
All right. I think Colleen hit on it in terms of this, as I read through the information about the certain themes that came through from the readings about the idea of legacy and putting in the whole notion of putting effort in. And if you put effort in, you actually get so much back, as Colleen said, when you give back, you get lifted up. And so I think what's for all of us, we've been around for a long time and we're not burned out and we're still excited about the profession. And I think it's because we collaborate with other people as well, who are excited about the profession, who are lifelong learners, and who have been giving back, and we lift each other up.
Wise
word. Yes, indeed. Yes, well said. I have to say, and I always talk about this, I've been a member of this organization while I was an undergraduate student, and I recall coming to these-
like 100 years ago.
Indeed. And I remember coming to these conferences, and I'm telling you, Dan, it's like a sponge. You always come, you learn something new. The power of collaboration, Dr. Cardini alluded to that, the power of building relationships. And let me just put another piece talking about professionalism, leadership opportunities, because here I am part of the board of directors today. So I can look back and see the different positions that I've held, and I'm sure our panelists as well can speak to that part. But I also want to add a piece that's important, because you used the word burnout. Dr. Cardini alluded to that earlier as well, in that you find opportunities to self-care by meeting people that have resources and opportunity for you to take care of yourself as well, so that you will be prepared and ready all the time to take care of your students and the constituents that you serve, including parents and the rest of the school community. Because believe it or not, the rest of the school community is, they look to us, health and physical educators, for, hey, look, I'm starting to work out, or hey, I would like to do some self-care, and they look for us because we are the experts. And how are you going to get these expertise and these skill set? By attending and being professionally involved and getting to know those people that are doing the work behind the work, and you be part of this process. So I'm speaking for myself. I've been a member since I'm an undergrad. Teachers ask me all the time, how do you keep this going? I said, because I stay abreast. I want to learn everything, and I'm a sponge. And I can't begin to tell you it's worthwhile. So that's my spiel on that. So
yeah,
that's it.
It's well said. And I'm not sure I can add much to it. Of course, I can certainly speak to what Colleen mentioned and Dr. Cardina and Vic mentioned about your professional association, Dan. But ultimately, you know, it comes down to recognizing that by putting in the effort, you get so much more in return. And to avoid the burnout, recognizing that excellence is a journey. We've talked about this. You've heard me say this before. And recognizing that there's no final destination. And that if you embrace that as a mantra, I think that that's how you avoid those particular issues regarding burnout and being potentially worn in terms of the profession itself. So some great conversation thus far. Amazing. I think we have another question on deck. Who is up next?
We have Catherine. I just saw amazing with some statistics in there. Go ahead, Catherine.
Kat, please go ahead.
Can we go back to Mackenzie and ask Mackenzie to introduce herself briefly, because you just went into your question. We want to hear where you are and what are you doing.
Then we'll go to Catherine.
Sure.
Go ahead, Mackenzie.
So my name is Mackenzie Colhane. Everybody calls me Mac. I'm currently a grad student at Canisius College, soon to be university, and I will be starting my student teaching in the fall.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mac.
Yeah.
Catherine.
My name is Kat. I started the PE graduate program at Canisius in January, and I'll be going into my 200-hour practicum this fall. So my question had to do with the study's sample, which referenced 62.8% of PE teachers were males. So my question is, do you feel that PE is a male-dominated profession? If so, how do you think this affects female PE teachers who might be dealing with professional challenges, burnout, and building their professional legacy?
Great question. I'm not sure that indeed. I have the answer to it. I certainly amazing have question. An answer that I'd like to pose to Kat, but Dr. Cardina, Ms. Corsi, anything? Ms. Corsi might be able to speak for historically as well from the perspective of the profession and some of its past, transgressions when it comes to physical education. But any ideas? I can add to it as well.
Kate, if that came from your research, maybe you should speak to it.
Well, we did collect those data, but I don't know. That's a great question. I don't have the answer to that specifically. I think I could, kind of do some philosophizing, just sort of think about what could it be. But just in general of women in sports over the years, isn't this the 2022 was the anniversary year for Title IX, right? So we've come a long way, and I think we have a long way to go. I don't have a good answer for that one. I'm sorry.
Great question, Kat. And but I think Dr. Cardina is spot on in one regard. Our history has shown that sport, physical activity, physical education has been dominant when it comes to males. But it's changing, and we're working on that. And recognizing our blind spots allows us to provide a more inclusive experience, including who we have leading physical education and the discipline moving forward. So we have a lot of questions to answer, Kat, when it comes to that. And my question I always pose to many of our members and others that are doing trainings with us is, what would happen if women were at the table when sport and physical activity was first originally devised? And I think that's what we're getting to when it comes to those types of questions. So I applaud you for bringing that up, Kat. And I think we are trending in the right direction. Okay.
I just want to add that, Catherine, you are being empowered as we speak. You and anyone else identifying as a female physical education teacher can be empowered by just being professionals and collaborate with those colleagues that share the same goals, i.e. to, again, teach and to prepare students for in your classes. So continue doing what you're doing.
I think there is a bit of a disparity between males and females, but I think the more concerning one is the lack of diversity.
Yes.
90% white across the board, indeed, everywhere. I think that's even a more of a challenge for us, is to get a diverse teaching force, having teachers who look like their students.
Yep. So students can identify. Exactly. Okay, Kyle, I think you're up next.
I am. Hey, guys, my name's Kyle. I am a grad student at Canisius, soon to be university. I have my 200-hour placement coming up in the fall and student teaching in the spring. And my question kind of overlaps with both Kat and Max, but obviously Dr. Seymour's and Dr. Cardina's study was on attitudes in the classroom and teaching and school climate. So in one of my 30-hour placements, I noticed that a female teacher, there was two teachers in the classroom, and the male teacher kind of like ran the show. He was more senior, and he's kind of on his way out of the probably retiring in the next 5 years. And she was newer. So I just want to know, how do you keep a positive attitude in a classroom like that, where you can't, you feel like your voice isn't really heard because the older teacher's kind of stuck in his own ways. Where I just saw the teacher I was mentoring taking the back seat. So I don't know what's a good way to keep a positive attitude in that situation.
Great question.
I think it's a real challenge, Kyle. I think for young teachers, it's probably, you know, depending on the situation that you find yourself in, I think it's probably one of the most difficult things right off the get-go. And it goes back to being involved, to everything really that's been said already, you know, being a part of your professional organization, staying active, learning, having the courage. You know, I don't know if you can see that sign back there. It says courage. And I think having courage to do the right thing for your students. I mean, I think it's hard sometimes. I think it's really easy for me to say, Kyle, standing here, not dealing with that situation. But I think you need to be your own person and your own teacher, you know, and you need to do what you've learned. You need to go in every day with a positive attitude and just, you know, work really hard not to let your colleagues, if they are kind of getting ready to phase out and they, you know, they're burnt out. You need to do everything you possibly can, A, to keep yourself up. You know, there's a saying that says, like, you have to put your own mask on first. You know, if you're on a plane and something's going bad, you put your own mask on first so you can help the person next to you. And it's the same kind of thing in your gymnasium. You know, you got to keep yourself up. You got to keep yourself healthy, and you got to keep yourself positive. And you know, hopefully your positive attitude will wear off on the negativity of somebody. I mean, obviously, if someone has been teaching that long, you know, they've had to enjoy it at some point or they wouldn't have stayed there. So, you know, maybe that person needs you more than you need them, right? And just, you know, do your best to keep doing what you're doing and not be pulled down. And it's hard because the word you used, I think, in your question was, you know, a more senior person, right? Can be very intimidating. And especially if it's a female with a male, and, you know, you're co-teaching, can be a really tough situation, and I'm not making light of it, but there are steps that you can take to do your very best to work through that situation.
Wise words. I would, Kyle, I would add to this question in a couple of different ways. And this speaks to the larger piece that we've discussed in this course about socialization. How are we socialized in physical education? Dr. Ramsey can help me with this. Dr. Cardina can help me with this. We presented on this last fall, but when we are socialized in physical education from, maybe I'm, you know, embellishing a little bit, but let's just use it as an example, from birth to 18 years old, maybe 20, we are cultured to physical education. And then at 18 to 20 years old, we decide we want to embark on a career of physical education. So we enter a teacher prep program and we enter a second stage. And within that second stage, there is conflict. The first stage, 18 to 20 years of physical education, either good or bad. And then the middle years of the second phase, professional, you have teacher prep programs like Canisius and others alike. And within the teacher prep programs, you're doing field experiences. And in those field experiences, either good or bad, alongside of what you're learning in classes. And then on top of it, Kyle asked the loaded question, how now when I leave teacher prep and I go into the organizational stage of my career, working for institutions, I now battle the micro and macro and meso politics that goes on there. And in your case, you bring up, you know, a senior veteran stuck in their ways type of professional. That's a lot to navigate. So how do we solve the problem? It's a difficult one. Colleen's advice is wise. But here's another way to solve the problem. Recognize what I just articulated. And I think that's something I've gone out of my way with our teacher prep candidates to recognize and make sure they're aware of those, of that migration through your career, arm you with that information to be prepared for that. So part of the example or part of the solution is you, yes, Kyle, but it's also us in teacher prep to make sure that you're, that we do a good job of preparing you to be able to offset that final stage of organizational socialization. So what does that mean? That means you know about what's coming, you know about the socialization phases, and then on top of it, we train you to make a change in your pedagogy. So you deliver a quality PE program. Start with you. You get into a school, don't worry about the others, be a team player, but start with you. And that's how you start. And when you get situated and ingrained in that school climate to a point where others start watching and asking questions, that's when you can start to maybe potentially mold others. So I think that's the advice that we have to think about as well. Dr. Ramsey, what do you think?
Surely, yes, indeed. One of the best advice that I received as an undergraduate student when I was doing student teaching, when I observed certain behaviors and practices that teachers were doing that were not aligned with what I was learning in my coursework, is that she said, "You're learning." And I kept saying to her, "No, no, no, my cooperative teacher, no, I'm not learning anything." She said, "You're learning what not to do. You're learning what not to do." So Kyle, your question is spot on, my friend. You're going to come into a situation where people are already set in their own ways. The advice that Dr. Seymour gave you is amazing because you can only change you, how you approach the person that already have that behavior, that attitude. At some point in your career, you're going to be the veteran teacher, and then you'll be able to reflect on how those people acted toward novice teachers and or someone coming into the profession. So you would be well equipped in knowing how to deal with that situation. So that was a great advice that you got, and I hope that you put that on your in your toolbox as you move forward in your career.
Thank you, Dr. Ramsey. Okay, so moving along quite nicely here, let's ask Colleen a question. She talked about professional associations. What makes a professional association so important, Colleen? Why should we encourage future professionals and veteran teachers, aside from what we discussed today, to join and stay involved?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, when we talk about teachers wanting to be viewed as professionals, I mean, from our perspective, we're professionals, dentists, lawyers, you know, we want to be viewed as professionals and we see ourselves as professionals. But in order to do that, in my mind, you need to support your professional organization. And there's, you know, there's a number of ways to do that. I mean, you can just join, but if you really want to reap a benefit from it, you have to engage in that professional organization and in what benefits they offer. You know, for example, we have people, and this breaks my heart when I hear this, because I've spent so much of my time trying to build this organization up. But, you know, people say, well, you know, what do I get for my money? And you, in order to reap the benefit, you have to be active. You have to engage in, you know, in the association. For example, we have a website. If you don't go to that website and you don't look at the tools that are on that website, you don't try to learn about your professional organization, you don't volunteer, you know, they say now, you know, talk about studies that volunteerism is down. I'm going to tell you something, in our organization, that is not the case. We have the most amazing volunteers ever. They stay, they get involved and they stay involved. You know, we have an executive council. Victor's on the board, Dr. Seymour's on the board, Kate's on the executive council. And these are people that keep coming back and coming back and coming back and staying involved. And not only are they giving to us of their time and their energies and their treasures and their talents, but we're giving back to them through member benefits. And I mean, there's a number of them. But so in my mind, there are so many more reasons to be a member of your professional organization. It is part of being a professional. It is part of being viewed as a professional. It's, you know, you're giving the, having the opportunity to give back to your colleagues. It's, you have the opportunity to earn what you need, CTLEs. everybody, all of you on this Zoom are going to have 100 hours of professional development every 5 years in order to maintain your teacher certification. One way to get those CTLEs is to be involved in your professional organization. We're an approved sponsor by the State Education Department. We have opportunities, we provide opportunities to network, you know, just like this. This is networking. I mean, I'm learning from being here. I mean, as educators, we have to be lifelong learners, listening to your questions, listening to the information from Dr. Cardina about the study. I mean, there's so much to learn every day. And being a part of your professional organization gives you the opportunity to do that. You can volunteer at the local level. You can volunteer at the state level. Dr. Ramsey is volunteering at the national level on a committee. You know, there's just so much to do and so much to learn if you take advantage of your membership. So I hope that helps to answer that question. I could talk for an hour.
Sure.
I won't. And
speaking to that, Ms. Corsi, Robert Sijek has a question I think that you've kind of covered, but it won't hurt to reiterate. So, Robert, go ahead, introduce yourself.
Hello. Yeah, my name's Rob. I'm a grad student at Canisius, and I start my student teaching in the spring coming up. But yeah, my question is, why do you think the membership in professional associations is underrepresented among the health and physical education teachers? And to kind of go off of that, what is being done to kind of increase membership?
Well, first of all, I haven't done a study to have data to support what I'm going to say, but I don't think our professional organization is any different than other professional organizations within the world of education. You know, every discipline, whether it's science, history, social studies, foreign language, special education, they nurses, administrators, they all have professional organizations like ours. And I'm going to hypothesize that probably membership in most of those organizations are similar to ours. I think administrators might be a little bit different. And one of the reasons is probably because they have budgets and schools pay for them. You know, teachers, a lot of times teachers don't want to part with the dollars. You know, our membership at once you're a professional is $110 annually. There are some school districts that pay that for you when you get a job and you're being interviewed. One of the questions, there's two questions that you need to ask. One, and the most important one, is, are you going to support my professional development, you know, as an educator working for the school district? I mean, that's number one. And that doesn't necessarily mean financially. It means, are they going to give you time off to go to events, to go to conferences? You know, that's really important. Unfortunately, there are school districts that don't allow that. I wouldn't work for a district that wouldn't support me as a professional, because obviously they don't value people in their continuous learning. And to me, that would be an issue. But I know when you're young and you're starting and you get offered a job, you know, it's hard to say no to that. But it is one question that you can ask. And another question at some point might not be in the first interview, but, you know, you can ask, is there financial support to attend conferences? Do you support membership? Because some school districts do. Some school districts pay their teachers memberships into their professional organization. They give them the time off and they support them financially going to a conference. So, you know, it's kind of all over the board out there. But in terms of our membership right now, we've got about 3,200 members. You know, we're always working to try to entice people to join. You know, when you're out there and you're a professional and you're a member and you're working in a district and your colleagues are not members, you know, you can help us. You can talk to them about why you've learned as a young professional it's important to be a member of your professional organization. Bring them along. You know, that's another thing that goes back to Kyle's question. You know, if you've got a seasoned teacher there that's never been a member, never been a, you know, a conference attendee, tell them, let's go, come with me. You know, let's do this together. We're a team here. Let's engage as a team with other professionals. You might be surprised. I mean, you got to try things, right? So We, as a professional organization, are always working on membership recruitment and retention. It's part of my responsibility as the executive director.
Thank you, Colleen.
Well stated. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna pop in there too. I think even if you're not an active member, there's so much that this organization does. So with your membership, I mean, there's advocacy that happens. This is a large group of people who work together for the common good of physical education and health education, and they do advocacy, they write curricula, they contribute to the standards, they work together as a group. And so even if you're really busy and you're having your second child and you can't become an active member, there's so much going on. I was going to say the example of seeing someone mowing the lawn, a child mowing the lawn, and someone saying that person should get PE credit for that. And, you know, you have organizations like this that see that and speak to the Board of Regents, speak to our Commissioner of Education, speak to our legislatures and say, no, you know, that's not physical education. And because people get all excited because it's so nice to see a young person helping an older person with their lawn maintenance and things like that. And it is physically active, but no, it's not physical education. And so we need these voices to speak out and advocate for physical education. And we do that through this organization. So that's extremely important. Another thing, Colleen, as you talked about money, this organization provides funding for physical education teachers. They provide grants, so you can write a mini grant and ask for funding for some of the activities that you would like to do in your class. And one other thing that I wanted to tag on with what Colleen had said is try to increase membership, you know, bring someone along. The teacher who got the Physical Education Teacher of the Year Award secondary, she became a member because her colleague at her high school asked her to come to a meeting, and that just started it. So that's a really good example of someone asking another person and then becoming an active member of the organization and end up being Physical Education Teacher of the Year for New York State.
Thanks, Dr. Cardina.
Yeah, fantastic. I just want to add a piece because Colleen alluded to that when she talked about when you meet your administrators in interviews or something to that effect. Listen, if you can justify, give a rationale for attending as an undergraduate student and graduate student to a conference that you can use information that you acquire at these workshops and bring that information back and justify, hey, this is what I'm bringing back for our students. You know, you're refining your craft, your skill set. So always be prepared to make the case by saying, here are these workshops that are aligned with what I'm teaching right now, and I believe this is perfect for what I'm doing, i.e. culturally relevant pedagogical practices or whatever that topic for that workshop that you can align with your teaching and your planning and preparation. I just wanted to plug that in there.
Awesome. Well, we got, again, a list of questions again, and I'm going to have Cameron ask her question followed by Malia. So Cameron, go ahead, introduce yourself.
Sorry, couldn't find the button. My name's Cameron Sullivan. I started the program in January, and I'll be doing my 200 hours in the fall and then student teaching in the spring. And in the past, over the past spring semester, I was doing my observation hours at Buffalo Public Schools 48 and 18. And I asked my mentor teacher if she was going to the conference at Canisius that we all were attending. And she told me that the reason she was not attending the conference is because her school required her to use a personal day. So I was just wondering if that's common or if maybe that's a big reason why maybe there isn't a large attendance at some of these conferences and if there's a way we can change that.
That's a great question.
I mean, Cameron, the only thing that I want to say is that we have generally between 16 and 1800 people at our annual conference, which is one of the three largest physical education and health education association conferences in the country. So we're not doing too shabby. You know, we're pretty proud of that. But I mean, I would take a personal day. I would take a personal day to go to a conference, you know.
And you know, speaking to that, you know, it does lend itself to that conversation about if you have been inspired by your professional association, then, you know, you won't have as much of an issue doing so. So I think that certainly speaks to that. But, you know, Cameron, it's a great question. We're seeing that more and more. Right now, there's a teacher shortage. So that that certainly speaks to that, that we have to be cognizant of, for sure. So thanks for your question. Okay, Malia, you're up.
Hi, my name is Malia. I am a graduate at Canisius. I will be starting my student teaching this coming fall, so I'm very excited for that. Going along with the professional associations that we were talking about, I researched an article that discussed teacher socialization. And it kind of broke it down into three different levels. And the middle one was this professional socialization with these organizations and associations. And it talked about in the article how that was the weakest link out of the three, because it's easy for students to get misconceptions or mistaken views from these professional organizations. And I was just kind of wondering what your guys' opinion was on this, if you agree or disagree that it's the weakest link. And if you do think that it is, how do you think we can strengthen it?
Great question. I'll start and I'll let Dr. Cardina and Ms. Corsi think about the answer. I agree with you 100%, Malia. It is the weakest link, but not for the reasons that you state. I can't refer to the research that you're talking about, but I just kind of went into that a little while ago about the problem, the competing tensions within socialization. You have 18 to 20 years of socialization during acculturation. You have organizational at the end that bookmarks it, bookends it with upwards of 20 to 30 years. And then in between 4 to 5 years. And within 4 to 5 years, you have teacher prep faculty like Dr. Cardina and myself and Dr. Ramsey talking about one way of thinking about physical education and health education. And then you go out in your field experiences and you may get that reinforced, but you also may not. And then you have professional associations like New York State AFRD that support that. But then when you're in the trenches, you might not see that. So I agree with you. It is the weakest stage, but it's not the weakest stage for some of the things that you're referring to. It's the weakest stage because we're up against, in professional socialization, you're up against 18 to 20 years at the beginning and 20 to 30 years bookending. That's the problem.
Clancy, are you talking about if during those time periods, if you've either had a positive experience or had a negative experience? I mean, is that the point that you're...
Yeah, that you have 20 years of physical education that takes place when you go through K through 12.
Right.
Some experiences may be good, some experiences may be bad. And then, so you are cultured and you think, I want to become a health or physical educator. Well, you've been taught, the only thing you've been taught at that point is what you've experienced as a student. So you have to unlearn that in 4 to 5 years in that middle stage. And when you go out in your field experiences and what you need to unlearn is being reinforced, that's difficult. That's difficult. So the weakest link is that middle stage, no question about it. Anything to add? Ms. Corsi, you seem to want to add something? No? Go for it.
Well, I mean, I speak from my own experience. I mean, I had a wonderful time in physical education class. It was my favorite class. You know, I was an athlete and I just loved every bit of it. So when I decided that I wanted to be a physical education teacher, I couldn't wait to get to university and experience everything there was to learn there. And then, you know, it goes to my obligation. I think that's a lot of what we're talking about here and how important it is to have that positive mindset when you walk into that classroom every single day, because the students that you're teaching, they're the ones that Clancy's talking about in that first chapter, so to speak, and that, you know, it is your obligation to make sure that they have an excellent experience, you know, in terms of learning, in terms of, you know, the feeling of being valued in your classroom and learning and enjoying what they're doing. I mean, kids, children, or adults are not going to be physically active or physically fit if it isn't bringing them joy. And if they're not learning and they're not feeling better about themselves, I mean, you have a lot of responsibilities as a teacher, and especially a physical education teacher and a health education teacher. I mean, I don't know if you realize how important this is, you know, this work that you're, you know, anticipating committing your life to. It's a really important work. I mean, you can change the trajectory of a person's entire life. I mean, I respect all the other disciplines. I mean, we have to be well-rounded human beings. Kids have to know how to learn. They have to know how to add, subtract, and multiply. I mean, you know, all of it's important. But in my mind, what you're doing is more important than any of that.
Well said. If we don't have our health, we don't have our body, what do we have, right? And, you know, and forgive me, Ms. Corsi, when I'm referring to the first 18 to 20 years and unlearning, I'm talking about unlearning the bad habits, the bad experiences, not the good ones. So that's the thing that we have to keep in mind.
Right. But every one of these students that I'm looking at, these beautiful and handsome faces right here, this is what you're going to be doing.
Right. 100%.
Right. And you can change that. So those students that, you know, cross that threshold into your classroom or your gymnasium, don't go out and leave you with a negative experience. I mean, that's, to me, that's a huge deal. It's a huge responsibility.
100%.
Yeah.
And an important one.
Yes, yes. I know Hayam Gino talk about we can make or break a student's day when we're in our physical education setting. So for sure. And for our listeners, I just want to reiterate that when Ms. Corsi talked about beautiful and handsome, she was looking at me and talking about me as well when she said handsome. I just want our listeners to be aware of that. So thank you, Colleen. So I just want to keep this going, keep the momentum. Thank you so much. So far, I really appreciate all the amazing conversation. I want to bring it back to the article and the body of research that Dr. Cardenia have to ask this next question. What are the issues that current health and physical educators must be aware of, and what would you suggest as possible strategies for to address these obstacles or challenges that they may be dealing with?
All right, thank you for that question. I think there's so many issues, so many topics. I'm going to focus on this notion of marginalization and burnout. When we did our research, Dr. Seymour and I, we found that the physical educators were also coaches, and they were also taking on leadership and administrative positions as well, and curriculum leaders. And so they're wearing all these different hats. And on top of that, many school districts now require them to have a health certification as well. So now they have to have expertise in physical education, expertise in health education, and then they also have expertise in coaching. And so it's difficult to wear those three hats. And I sort of see this work creep going on. And so I think that's one of the major challenges for physical educators, is to be able to manage that.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Seymour, you want to add something to that?
Challenges moving forward. I've kind of spoken to it. So you know, until I'm blue in the face, I think the attitudes and the perceived marginalization is the issue in our profession, particularly, and making sure that doesn't lend to the burnout that Dan asks about. That's what I think we have to continue to remember. There's some questions posed in the chat about the value of physical education when rendered against other disciplines. And my argument has always been, just because we're physical education and we're not mathematics doesn't mean that we don't have value. And that's an important thing to keep in mind, that each discipline, like Colleen mentioned, has its own distinct value. And mathematics isn't asked to be physical education, and nor should physical education be asked to be mathematics.
Awesome. Awesome. I just want to add also, folks, that this is the reason why it is vital that you align or use research and apply that to your practice. Because when we're talking about strategy suggestions, even within the body of work that Dr. Cardenia and her colleagues have done around attitudes and so on, you will find information that you can apply to your practice in anticipation of what might be taking place. So remember, not only this body of research that Dr. Cardina, but just in general research and that is applicable to the practice of what you are charged with doing, which is to teach and provide quality health and physical education instruction.
Excellent. So I think Eleanor has a question next. Eleanor, why don't you introduce yourself and ask your question?
All right. Well, hello. My name is Eleanor. I also joined the master's program at Canisius in January, and I'll be doing my 200 hours in the fall and student teaching in the spring. And so my question from the article, and we just mentioned, so I know there was like a struggle with support for physical education teachers. And then I did notice it said majority of physical education teachers are coaches or have leadership roles as department leads or chairs or coaching. And so I was curious, like, why do you think this is? And because I know we mentioned there is a lack of support. So I think it's interesting that there's a lower burnout rate, even though there is a lack of support.
Great question.
All right, good question. Well, they are getting support from their principals and their administrators, so that helps a lot. The lack of support seems to come from their peers. And so I think it's really important, and we've talked about this before, to align yourselves with colleagues that do support you and find those people that you can collaborate with.
I think one of the things in physical education that we have to be very aware of is that if you are going into physical education because you want to coach, it's not a good idea. You know, that's not fair to your students. It's not fair to your district. You're not fair to your parents or your community. You want to coach? Be a coach. You know, do something else you love during the day. But you should not be going into physical education just so you can coach. And I hate to say it, but a lot of people do that. And then they're in class. They're not teaching. You know, they're making their plans for their coaching in the afternoon. And it's all right. I can say what I want to say because I'm getting ready to retire, so I don't have to hold back anymore. But, you know, to me, that is just abhorrent. It really is. I mean, you know, because your students are not getting the best of you, and that is not fair. That is not fair to anybody. And, but unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of physical education teachers that do that. And, you know, it's no secret. Don't think it's going to be a secret. If that's why you're teaching PE so that you can coach, because it's not, because it's written all over you all the time, what you're doing. When people are evaluating you, they're going to know it. And it's just is a sad situation and not a very good idea.
It's a good point, Colleen, as well. And we were Colleen and I were chatting, you know, about or discussing during the podcast about the competing phases of socialization. And that's something I did not get into, but there's also the value, your subjective warrant, it's called. Why are you entering? And that speaks to, have you been acculturated to be a physical educator because you want to be a coach versus do you have the warrant to want to be a teacher? And those are two distinct tracks as well that that play a role in the influence or socialization of us into the profession. So Colleen speaks to that quite nicely.
And when we talk about legacy and journey, your philosophy of teaching as a practitioner, you should start thinking about that philosophy, your personal philosophy, and that's going to change as you transition and you get more into the field. So clearly there's opportunities for growth as always, but remember to always reflect on your own attitudes and your own way of delivering the instructional instruction to your students and what is it that you do to make yourself a professional or get better at what you do. So always reflect and certainly know that your philosophy of teaching is going to change and is going to get better as you go move forward. It's not going to be the same. It's something that's going to be part of that journey of that legacy.
Well said. Okay, so we're getting close to the end here, folks. We've had a really vibrant conversation. I love it. Question for Colleen. Again, we've kind of talked about this already, but I think it cannot hurt for our listeners to hear more. Why must all teachers, and I love the term where we're using teachers as opposed to physical educators, because ultimately we are teachers, whether it's teachers of mathematics, teachers of English, teachers of physical education. We are teachers first. Why must all teachers consider their professional legacy?
I think that it's important to start early on. That's why that question is so important for this group of young teachers. You build your legacy throughout your career. And if you're thinking about that as a new teacher, it only can bring your practice value. Because to create a valuable legacy, A, you have to be the very best teacher that you can be. And you have to start that. And I hear you talking about a number of you saying you're going into your 200-hour practicum and then your student teaching. You literally can start your legacy then when you're in front of students. And you have to keep track of what you're doing. And everything that you do becomes a part of that legacy. And, you know, I know for myself, I wasn't thinking about that. Nobody talked to me about my professional legacy when I was a young student. Or so I think that bringing that up now is so valuable to you. And Dr. Seymour, when he was president of New York State AFER, I'm going to get this thing. Can you see this? I don't know if you can see it because it's a mirror. Can you see it?
No, we just see ourselves.
Oh, in the mirror? See how handsome and beautiful you all are? It says a professional legacy is a journey. By hearing this now, you're able to start very early on. And it says, what path will you travel? And that it was such a beautiful theme that Clancy used throughout his year as president of New York State AFER, because it makes you think about the decisions that you're making. And, you know, part of that professional legacy should be giving back to the profession. And one way to do that is by joining New York State AFER and taking on leadership positions. You know, you don't become president, you know, your first year of teaching, but there's so many steps that you can take that add to that professional legacy along the way by being involved in the future professional section, by attending conferences while you're, you know, while you're students as either undergraduates or graduate students. And then getting involved in your zone. You know, you're all going to be in a zone, you know, when you get your first teaching position. And your zone actually has monthly meetings. Generally, they have leadership positions that you can volunteer for. And then that's how you start. And you, one word of advice would be keep track of what you do. You know, I always admire my higher ed colleagues because they have, you know, a resume, curriculum vitae, and boy, they write down everything because it makes a difference when they're up for promotion, if they're presenting, if, you know, they're involved in leadership positions, it all makes a difference. And if you start keeping track of all of those things that you do through the years, you'll be further ahead. And each one of those positive professional decisions that you make to share with your colleagues, to become active in your professional organization, it all becomes a part of your professional legacy. And the sooner you start, the better.
Excellent. Okay, we have a question from Vinny, and this might be for Dr. Cardina and perhaps myself and Dr. Ramsey to jump into as well. Go ahead, Vinny. Introduce yourself.
I'm Vinny Liberto. I joined the program in January, and I'm doing my 200 hours this upcoming fall semester. I saw that the article spoke on high-stake testing regarding student performance evaluations, and this being for subjects like math and ELA. How is, I guess for the PE department, the risk involved was the reduction of time. How can we advocate so our time with the students isn't reduced?
That's a great question. I think you're right. If something's not tested, then sometimes it doesn't count. And we get that feeling sometimes with physical education and other subject areas that don't have a test associated with it. I think the first thing to do is to join New York State EFERD, because they will provide you with the information needed to advocate for physical education, because this is an ongoing concern. This has been on for years. And so that's one way to help with this, is to get some resources and help from New York State EFERD. The second thing is, I really think that there, and I'm kind of hopeful with this, there is so much information now about the importance of physical activity for longevity and health in people and our general population. And it is also being supported by our federal government, especially the Centers for Disease Control, and the role of physical activity in terms of overall health. And so that message is kind of getting out there. People are doing their steps and they're doing more physical activity. They're making communities that are more physically active, that people can do, they're more convenient for pedestrians to get up and move and people to ride their bike places and things like that. So I think we do have a national momentum towards that. And also there's a lot of information now about the impact of loneliness and to how that can negatively affect people's health. And physical activity is another opportunity for people to be social and to counteract the negative health effects of our loneliness. So I think that with your support from New York State EFERD and from current research about health and well-being of our nation, those are some things that we can draw from.
I agree. You know, I'll keep it brief, and I already brought this up. Some of those conclusions and inferences to Dr. Cardina and our work was really speaks to some of the stuff that I have investigated regarding teacher evaluation and high stakes testing. I do maintain what I said before, that we have to get out of our own way. And physical education in the past has been a chameleon, always trying to change and alter and pander to the current climate. And I think we have to stand on our own two feet and recognize that we have value in and of itself. And physical education, just like any other discipline, is needed for the well-rounded education of each child. And you've heard me use the plant analogy before. In order for the plant to grow, it needs water, sunlight, air, clean air, rich nutrients and soil. And the same thing applies to a child. It needs music and art. It needs English and mathematics, and it needs physical and health education. And, you know, the water is never asked to be the sunlight. And so why should physical education be asked to be something it's not? It doesn't need to be the mathematics or the ELA. It just needs to be physical and health education. That's what we are. Say it loud, say it proud.
And my only take on that is the late, great Charlie Chisholm once said that if you don't have a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. So you should always advocate for health and physical educator in whatever school setting you're in. But your work is what's going to value what is it or validate the work that you're doing before the eyes of the people that you're servicing. So if you want to be part of that process, I can't add to anything else other than to say, you bring that seat to that table. If you don't have it, bring your folding chair and be part of that voice for health and physical education and as a profession.
Awesome. Okay, Andrew has a great question. Andrew, go for it.
Hi, everyone. I'm Andrew. I'm in the physical education program at Canisius, and I'm heading into my student teaching in the fall. And I'm remaining at the school that I did my 200 hours at. And like Dr. Seymour mentioned earlier, this building is a great example of how physical education teachers are secluded from the other subject teachers. We were in the corner of the basement. We all shared one office. And I, during this 200 hours, had very minimal interaction with any other subject teachers. So I was just wondering, obviously, you guys have a lot more experience in the field than me. Aside from just like after school activities and getting involved with that, how can we connect with other subject teachers to kind of gain their respect and be a little less separated from them?
Awesome question.
I agree.
Get to know what they're doing. Get to know, ask them what they're doing in their classrooms and ask them how you can support or supplement what you're doing in physical education and in ways with movement, you know, and you can bring about movement by supporting what they're doing and believe it or not, they will see what you're doing and help and how you're helping them, i.e. whether that is team building activities to get students to be on task, activities like perhaps yoga to help calm students down, whatever it is that you can do to support them. And if you can justify that in your physical health and physical education setting, you will certainly help to make a difference. That's just my 2 cents on that. And I'll give the floor to our panelists.
Well, the only thing I like, Victor, what you just said, and I think interdisciplinary education is really important. And in terms of physical education, as it relates to other disciplines, there's so many things that you can do. And, you know, so that's something that you could research. You could go to the math, you know, department and you could work with them. But there's many, many, many interdisciplinary ideas out there, and that would help you to engage in some of your colleagues. That's one thing. If you're at the elementary level, and this may seem like a little out there, but one of our staff members here, Jessica Zanecki, is the president of her PTA, the elementary level. And, you know, so many teachers don't attend those meetings. And it is, you know, it's after school, but it's very, very important. And it's a way that you can provide leadership in the local district by being a part of that. You know, physical education programs are always looking for financial support. And by being active in your PTA or PTC, you get to know other teachers, you get to know parents, you know, you get a little in there, because lots of times, you know, they have lots of money to share and give away. And, you know, if you become best friends with not only the secretary in the office, but the janitorial custodian type people, you know, they're the ones that know what's going on in school. And then the PTC helps you to connect or provide leadership for other teachers at the elementary buildings to be involved in that, if that's where you end up teaching. Those are a couple ideas. You know, there is a teacher's room that on your free period, you know, some people tell you to totally stay away from those places because they can be sources of negativity sometimes, but go there, meet teachers, and bring your beautiful positive attitude, you know, and again, lifting others up. So, you know, there's different things that you can do, but those are a few examples.
Yeah, Dr. Seymour, do they go and visit other classes during student teaching?
We encourage it, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's another thing, is to go in and ask your cooperating teacher if you can go visit other classrooms and interview and chat with other teachers. There's also, every school has a wellness policy. And so check out and see what your school's wellness policy. There might be something that you can contribute in terms of helping with faculty and staff wellness. You could get something going that encourages the staff to be physically active, and you can take a leadership role of that or get involved with that committee that is the wellness committee of the school, because they are required to have that to get federal money. So that's another way to do that. And then if there's any other thing going on, like a parent-teacher conference or something like that, to offer to have some type of physical activity available that evening, maybe so they can bring their kids and you can do something with the kids so the parents can meet with the teachers. So you're making yourself more relevant in terms of the physical education teacher throughout the district.
Great advice, Dr. Cardina. Go ahead.
Also, when you have, what did you just call it when the parents come?
Parent-teacher conference?
Parent-teacher conferences, but they're going to come, hopefully the parents are going to want to come and see you too. And you need not to be in your sweats with your sneakers. You need to look like a professional. You need to be ready to engage with parents about their students and their children. And another thing, I just had an idea. Talk about learning as you go. What about when you're doing a unit that you're really, really proud of, and it's something different and unique, you could actually create an invitation that you send to your teacher colleagues and invite them to come into your classroom and watch what you're doing. You know, that's one thing. Another thing, and this is like elementary again, but you know how classroom teachers generally walk their students to the gymnasium, right? And they kind of turn them over to you. Go out there, be out there to accept those students and engage for just a few minutes with those classroom teachers. It's another way to get to know them.
Oh. Great advice. I could add
ideas.
Pardon me?
said, you know, they're just little ideas, but sure, sometimes little ideas grow into, you know, sure, little successes. Which
all I would say, I have so much more to add, but I want Dr. Cardina and Ms. Corsi to really fuel the fire, so to speak. But an interdisciplinary approach is certainly one way. And the other thing is, as Kate mentioned, we need to remember that it's our duty as physical educators to always be advocating. And one way to advocate is to provide meaning. And meaning means that we provide experiences in physical education that transcend the classroom, and getting parents and others involved to see some of the great things we do, I think speaks to that question that has been asked by Andrew about advocating and making those connections. But recognizing too, it has to be reciprocated as well. Interdisciplinary approaches. We have this tendency to always be dualistic and splitting the mind and body, but that's a different philosophy over different beverages over a different time. But we have one more question for today. It's been a great discourse, and we have Alex. Alex, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Alex Fisher. I'm a grad student at Canisius. I apologize for my camera not being on. I'm tucked in my work office at the moment. My shift starts in a couple minutes. So, but my question was, the article spoke on how being enthusiastic and inclusive helps the students become more excited and inclusive in the physical education environment. I was just wondering if anyone noticed any of that transferring over throughout the school in general. So, you know, having a super enthusiastic physical education class just kind of makes the whole school environment itself more involved and more enthusiastic and excited to be there.
Great question. I like that. I like that you're thinking about how physical activity can be sort of an umbrella for the school attitude and atmosphere. And I think if you can have some type of initiative that is school-wide for faculty, staff, and students, I think that would be awesome. You know, giving people that common ground.
And I think the other thing about that, and the research that Dr. Cardina and I undertook, it does state that, you know, physical educators, it seems to be are very positive. And but you know, to Eleanor's question, I believe it was, it's also the case that physical educators are taking on extra responsibilities more so than other disciplines. Now, what does that all mean? Well, they don't have some of the other pressures that other disciplinary professionals have. So they have that opportunity to do that. So I'm not sure there's an answer in all of that, Alex, but I do think that climate plays a huge role. And the fact that in our research with Dr. Cardina, we were able to see that physical educators were positive, did feel less likely to be burned out, those types of things. And that certainly contributes to that positive environment as well. Mm-hmm. Well, that was fantastic, huh? Great
yes.
stuff.
Yes, indeed. I just want to do a quick plug because it was asked. I am going to put in the chat the future professional section president of New York State AFERD, who happens to be an undergraduate student at Cortland State University. And his name is Jared Rago. Please reach out to him. I will argue that you should, if you don't have one already, start thinking of a majors club at soon to be Canisius University. Reach out to him, even as a student member of New York State AFERD, and be part of that process. Hear what these professionals or future professionals are doing, both undergraduate and graduate students, and be part of the mix. And I just dropped his information in there, and I'm sure he'd be happy to hear from you. In fact, I just connected him with a student leader at my institution, York College, to reach out to see how she could be part of this journey as well. So I just wanted to put that in there for you.
Thanks,
thank you,
Dr. Ramsey. So
welcome, sir.
So let's, on behalf of Dr. Ramsey, Ms. Corsi, and Dr. Cardina, and all of our passionate New York State AFERD members, we would like to thank the graduate students from Canisius College for joining us to share their thoughts and perspectives. This session will be posted on the New York State AFERD website and our podcast channel. Stay tuned for subsequent episodes where we continue this project with more graduate students.
Indeed. And please visit us at NewYorkStateAFERD.org, social media handles at NewYorkStateAFERD, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. And please mark your calendars for our exiting state conference at the exciting conference at the New York at Turning Stone in Verona, New York this November. So we would love to see you all there. And thank you so much for having us today and to our listening audience.
Thank you, Colleen. Thank you, Dr. Cardina. Thank you, graduate students. You were fantastic.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.